FM News Talk 97.1. Podcast.
Senator McCaskill will not support any plan to cover people with pre-existing conditions that isn't Obamacare. Obamacare was written to hold hostage people with pre-existing conditions so that you'd have to have Obamacare, supposedly, to get this coverage, and that's exactly what she's based this campaign on. And that's simply false. We can protect people, and we must, with pre-existing conditions, but they shouldn't be forced to pay the prices they are paying now. They shouldn't have the narrowing of networks that we are seeing all over this state because of Obamacare. And so I will work across the party lines with anybody who shares the goal of protecting those with pre-existing conditions, and I think, too, young people and their parents' insurance. But I do not think that folks should be held hostage to the liberal failed experiment of Obamacare, and we need somebody who's not just towing the party line on this.
Wow. So did you watch the debate last night, I guess, is the Friday morning question of the day. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. Because, I recorded it and I watched it in bits and pieces, a little bit of it live, a little bit of it as it went on. Tried desperately to stay away from social media so I wouldn't be influenced by what other people thought about it, right? And I walked away from it.
Underwhelmed,
quite frankly. I'm, you know, primarily with Claire. I'm going to get more into this later, but golden opportunities were missed last night in this debate.
Yeah,
they were.
Sure,
they just were.
Yeah,
and topics completely avoided.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did we hear back from the Hawley people?
Not yet.
So originally, we were supposed to have Josh Hawley on yesterday talking about the debate. And then they told us that we could get him on this morning after the debate, but we have not heard back from his campaign people yet. So we're really hoping we could get him on here this morning and chat about this. But whether we do or not, I guess, kind of remains to be seen. We'll see. We'll keep our fingers crossed. If that happens, it's probably going to be in the 8 o'clock hour, around 8:37 this morning is kind of what we're looking at there. I don't know. I was watching this debate because I tuned in. Look, Channel 2's carrying a little bit of it now. I tuned in and I want to see who the moderators were, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
They bring in Judy Woodruff from, you know, New York or Washington. I guess NPR is probably based in Washington, from Washington, D.C. And Joe Manies, who was a longtime political reporter at the Post-Dispatch, and I think she works for NPR, or the local National Public Radio Station now, and then because Channel 5 is a partner in it, although it didn't air on Channel 5, it was on Channel 9, Mike Bush was one of the moderators asking questions. Then they picked people out of the audience. It was just weird.
It was weird.
Like random people out of the audience that Ruth Izzell was interviewing.
It looked very PBS-y, too. It looked very Channel 9 with the, at one point, Hawley was standing there and the whole background was black. He looked like a floating person on the black background. It looked just like any other like public broadcast forum there.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, here's what I find out with this thing. It's easy to be critical if you're not one of the people standing up there at the podium.
Sure. Yeah.
Because debating is an art form. Mm-hmm. And I think that both of these folks, her to a greater extent than him, are skilled at debating. But Claire McCaskill is she's a slickmeister when it comes to debating, and she's dangerous because of that. So you kind of have to you have to watch your P's and Q's. I felt personally that maybe Josh was a little too cautious last night.
Yeah,
I did. I would like to have seen him be more aggressive with her at the risk of being accused of, you know, beating up on a grandma. You know, I mean, honestly, that was the contrast last night.
Absolutely.
I thought, though, compared to her, there were times when she seemed almost erratic. And I don't, like, mean because, like, she's a woman, but there were times where she was like, oh, my gosh, and, like, kind of almost shouting. I think his, like, calm composure, although he wasn't really holding her feet to the fire, was a night probably purposeful. You know, like, let her look crazy and I'll just, like, stay cool here.
Well, I guess I'm not convinced after watching it that any minds got changed last night.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I think there was a missed opportunity. I'm going to talk more about that coming up here in a few minutes. Lots going on. If you missed it, this thing is really setting itself up to be a thing of beauty. We've got a horde of Hondurans heading toward the United States southern border. A horde.
A horde.
And it's a horde of Hondurans. And the Honduran horde is heading up here, I'm convinced, completely coordinated by progressive left groups in this country because they're broke. I mean, they're coming here because they don't have any money. So how are they financing and feeding themselves on this thousand-mile march they're supposedly on right now, which is coincidentally time to get them to the southern border just before Election Day? How does that work? And now the president's threatening to send U.S. troops to the border, and this is shaping up to be a doozy, let me tell you that. We're going to get to more of your phone calls. I've got Rick Stream, the St. Louis County. He's the St. Louis County Elections Board Director now, right? But he is a former member of the Missouri legislature, and he was one of the budget directors when Tim Jones was the speaker down there. One of the questions that's come up about these ballot issues for November 6th, specifically regarding the gas tax, is how MoDOT is funded. It's funded differently than just about apparently most other agencies in Jefferson City. And I wanted to ask Rick Stream because he was in charge of, directing the budget and how things were funded. He's going to fill us in on that, give us some election preview of how things are going in the county. And that's coming up about 6:10. So stay tuned for that. We'll get to all of that in your phone calls coming up.
Said, I would raise taxes on the middle class ever. What I've always said is, let's talk about people that are making millions of dollars and their taxes. You know, this is fascinating to me. This is such a reasonable minimum wage proposal. He likes to lecture about the working people and flyover country and how they're getting ignored. This is an 85 cents a year increase, gradually going up to $12 an hour. Amazon's already paying $15 an hour. We have over 100,000 parents in Missouri that are trying to raise their children on a minimum wage job. Raising the minimum wage is the right thing to do, and wages are not growing.
Yeah.
Actually, talk to those Amazon people about how they feel about that minimum wage increase.
Well, did she admit that none of that happened until Donald Trump got the economy moving along either? Once again, what you heard last night was Claire McCaskill proving how out of touch she is as a left-wing progressive in this country. This is a very reasonable minimum wage hike. This is 85 cents a year. This isn't going to hurt anybody, says Claire, who's got, $200 million in the bank. The people it would hurt the most are the ones she wants to give the hike to. This defies logic. But we're going to get to more of that in a minute. First of all, let's get to the soapbox.
Now, Mark Cox, soapbox.
All right, we finally got the debate we wanted last night, right? Between Josh Hawley and Claire McCaskill. Just the two of them on a stage. Should have been like a boxing match. But in the end, we didn't get much at all. Listen. There's one way to beat Claire McCaskill in this state, and that is to unveil her for the left-wing progressive that she is. Just saying it is not enough. On guns, on taxes, on abortion, on immigration. Now, unless you watched a different debate than I did, last night was an opportunity lost. Go to cut 32, please.
It's so interesting that Josh mentioned the $716 billion. That was not a cut to Medicare in ACA. That was a cut to the profits of the health insurance companies. That was giving a haircut to the guaranteed profits of the health insurance companies in the Medicare Advantage program. And what did we do with that $715 billion? We filled the donut hole for Medicare prescription program Part D.
Stop. Completely got away with a lie here, and nobody called her out on it. Accused them of wanting to cut Medicare and all of this stuff. You know, Medicare expanded as part of Obamacare. Missouri refused to take the expansion, but it was put in place as a sleight of hand. Nobody called her out on this. unless you watched this last night, you may not understand what I'm saying here, but you need to go back and watch it. Here's my first question. Did McCaskill get to pick the moderators? Judy Woodruff and Joe Manies are definitely from the left side of the political spectrum. I have no idea where Mike Bush is on politics. I've known Mike for a number of years, but I've never worked directly with him. But I heard a clear difference in tone of the questions last night asked to McCaskill versus Hawley. Now, PBS and NPR, we all know, are the love children of the liberal elite in this country. Case in point, the Project Veritas video. It was this week. Do you remember that? Does anybody remember that?
It's like I'm telling you, there's something going on. Like, because I got the same argument from this guy. She doesn't support a ban on semi-automatic firearms. And I'm like, I'm right, yeah, right? She does.
Yes, she does. How in the world, in a 75-minute debate, did that not come up? You don't have to be Walter Cronkite to figure out the questions. Senator McCaskill, how much money has Planned Parenthood surreptitiously funneled to your campaign? Senator McCaskill, your regional campaign official was heard on video saying you support a full ban on semi-automatic rifles. These are simple questions that were never brought up. Instead, we hear Judy Woodruff wanting to know what these two candidates would do on the Saudi Arabian situation. Who the hell cares? This was not a strong performance by Claire McCaskill. She was on the ropes all night. If she claimed to be a moderate once, she claimed it 100 times, but nobody challenged her on her voting record. I think Hawley had a tough challenge last night of not wanting to appear to be too hard on his grandmother, but opportunities were missed here. Opportunities were missed, and Claire got a pass last night. We'll be back in just a minute.
We're going to cut spending, absolutely. And we had to do...
That's a tough order, Mr. President.
It's not as tough as you think. And frankly, there's a lot of fat in there, but we had to get the military done last time. You know, President Obama let it go, and I could say beyond President Obama. The military was in terrible shape.
Speaker Tim Jones, good morning, my friend. How are you?
Bad and bougie.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Tim, good morning to you. How are you?
Hey, Mark, I'm great. Doing good this morning. How you all doing there?
I'm doing fine. Hey, I have a question. When you fill in for me,
yes, sir.
Do Denise and Trisha giggle every time they hear the bad and bougie thing? Like, every time?
More often than not.
I thought so.
Oh, my gosh, and look
can't
what,
help it.
Look
it still
what
makes
I have.
Me laugh.
Bad and bougie.
Uh-huh. I always have it up my sleeve when Tim's in here.
Trisha, yeah, it's like she's got a button somewhere.
I do.
Around the studio with it, mm-hmm. And it plays constantly.
I actually have it on my phone, too.
It's like a drop. They've made a drop out of it. Well,
love it.
You know, I want to point out to Tim, because I've got people on hold here anxious to talk about this. Yep. I put out my voter's guide on our website. I just want to push that again.
Yeah,
971.
Awesome. Yeah, talk
971talk.com/Cox. It's on the Facebook page. We pushed it out on the station Twitter account as well, and I've retweeted it from mine, at MarkCox971. I encourage people to go and look at that, because there are so many important issues. I mean, seven of them statewide, two big ones in St. Louis County, because one's been removed by a judge. But regardless, there's some big issues facing us in November.
Yeah, Mark, and I'm so glad you did that. I actually I saw that this morning. I retweeted your voter guide as well just now before I came on, and I thought that was fantastic. You put that together. And, you know, wherever folks end up coming down on the issue, whether they agree with you or not, they need to look at your voter guide, because I think people they may not realize there's a lot of stuff on the ballot. And this is a year where you really need to download your sample ballot. If you're in St. Louis County, I believe you can just go to the St. Louis County Election Authority website and do that. I'm sure the other counties have the option to do that as well. Or
right.
Find it. Find your ballot. Find a sample ballot somewhere, because otherwise you might get in the ballot box and realize you don't have enough time to do all this. And we don't want you to give up and go away, because there's a lot of important things to vote on. Yes, there's all the candidates. You're going to be voting for hopefully a new U.S. Senator with Hawley v. McCaskill. You've got an important state auditor's race because of what it has to do, especially not only just the office itself, but what it has to do with Clean Missouri. And you've been doing an excellent job, Mark, talking about Clean Missouri long before anybody else was paying attention to Amendment 1. That's what Clean Missouri sponsored. You're not going to see the words Clean Missouri on your ballot. That's the sponsoring George Soros-funded group that's been pushing it. You're going to see Amendment 1. You're going to see all these other amendments. You're going to see all these propositions. If you're in St. Louis County, you're going to see all these charter proposals. You're going to see taxes. Mark, somebody told me from St. Louis County that up to 40-plus ballot items, separate items, you could be looking at. It's taking voters who are voting absentee up to 10 minutes to vote. The lines could be extremely long. I hope they're long on Election Day. I hope people are energized to go vote in this midterm, which I believe is the most critical midterm of my lifetime. It's going to set the course of the country for the next 2 years or maybe beyond.
Well, I hope people pay attention. Here's the bottom line. There are a bunch of, on the St. Louis County ballot, I pulled mine up, there are a bunch of judges you have to vote for. Now, a lot of them are unopposed, and it's basically to give them a new term, which they have to do in Missouri. But to your point, there could be, it could take you 15 or 20 minutes, maybe longer, to vote if you're not familiar with how these, how you're going to vote on these before you walk in the booth, which is the main reason I put the guide together. Agree with me, disagree with me, but I get to the bottom line on each one of these, including, Tim, I want to bring up a couple of them with you specifically. The on the marijuana propositions, there's three of them. Prop 2 and 3 are amendments to the Constitution, and then Proposition C is the one that the legislature could go in and alter. And I've encouraged people, I'm not in favor of any of them, but if you're going to vote for medical marijuana, Prop C is the preferable one because it dedicates the taxes that are raised to law enforcement and drug treatment, which are going to be the two outcomes, I think, eventually if marijuana gets widespread approval in Missouri.
Yeah, Mark, I think that's right. And I think here, this is a perfect example of a situation where if people don't get educated on the nuances of these three different marijuana proposals, I have a feeling a lot of voters are either going to vote no on all three of them or they're going to vote yes on all three of them. And I think voting yes on all three of them is really a bad idea because they're extremely different. So if you sit down and if you actually dig through the details of these things, you're going to see the complexity and the differences between all of them. And like you just mentioned, the first two are amendment changes. It enshrines the use of marijuana in our Constitution. And I'm not sure that's a really good idea.
No.
And that's why I'd say the folks with Prop C, when they drafted that, they're like, let's put it in there legislatively. It's a legislative proposal. That way the legislature can amend the marijuana use in our state as that science around that usage becomes more well known, to the point, Mark, where the legislature could even repeal it. They could repeal the entire thing because it's a statutory change. And we've done statutory changes in the past. One of the most famous ones, Mark, you may remember, was the Health Care Freedom Act that I helped with back when I was in the legislature with Jane Cunningham and some other great folks back then. That was a statutory amendment change. So it's not unusual to do a statutory amendment change. I think it's a perfect opportunity here to see whether or not medical marijuana should be utilized in our state moving forward. So that is a nuance that you picked out of there. And folks, you're not going to really notice that unless you look at this ballot before you walk in.
Yeah. How about the gas tax? Where are you on that, Tim?
You know, Mark, I'm conflicted on this because on the one hand, I heard your earlier discussion with Senator Igel, and I agreed with a lot of that. On the other hand, a sales tax, Mark, here's what I'm always in favor of: reducing and eliminating the income tax, which is a tax on our labor. I view that as an immoral tax. I'd love for Missouri to eventually take that down to zero, like Florida, Texas, Tennessee, states, by the way, that are doing wonderfully, thank you very much, and replacing that with a fair tax model, a user fee tax. Well, a sales tax on gas is exactly that. It taxes the users who use it. So if we can continue to reduce our income tax in the state of Missouri like we've done twice in the last 5 years now, all kudos to the legislature for continuing that effort this year, then, I'm okay with moving us to more of a consumption-based tax. So, I'm not entirely opposed to Prop D. I'm still kind of working it out in my own head. But I think it's a good idea to move us to a consumption, fair tax, user fee-based system and get rid of the income tax entirely. So if Prop D passes, I'm going to be one of the people continuing to tell the legislature, let's continue to lower that income tax and hopefully take it down to zero in my lifetime.
And the difficulty is, and the question is, let's assume that they pass this gas tax and suddenly they're flush with cash.
right.
for transportation. What's to stop them from making that fungible, right? From taking the money they used to send to the Department of Transportation in the budget, because I know you understand this more deeply than just about anyone, and just moving it somewhere else in government as opposed to deciding to reduce taxes.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I need to look at in that proposition, Mark. You had a caller yesterday. I was listening to you. I was actually out in Arizona, which is, as we talked about for months, is battleground zero for the national election cycle this year. It definitely is. And you had a caller on that was talking about that and why his opposition to it was based on some previous issues like this, the gambling proposal.
Right.
And it was supposed to go to education. Well, you know, unless it's specifically enshrined in the Constitution to do that, you really can't bind the hands of the appropriators, right? And so there's actually a good reason for that. So does this go to specifically transportation? That's something I'm going to have to look a little deeper into.
It does, supposedly, right? It does. It supposedly has to be spent either between the highway patrol or on construction projects. But isn't there money put in the general fund right now from the general funds into the Department of Transportation to fund it?
Well, not necessarily. Remember, this is a very complicated issue because that is one of the problems the Missouri legislature faces. They don't have general appropriating authority over MoDOT. That is a constitutional issue. MoDOT obtains their money through a complicated constitutional matrix. So, no, the appropriators can't just say, we're going to take more money and put it into roads and bridges. See, that's one of the problems we have in Missouri. I wish we could change that because other states do it that way, Mark. They do say in their general revenue appropriation every year, what's our priorities in the state? If it's interstate commerce and transportation and roads and bridges, they get to adjust that. But that only exists, I think, in about 22 or 23 states. We're not one of those. So that's why we have all these proposals that come up every few years for more funding for MoDOT.
So how does the money get to them now other than the existing fuel tax?
Well, there's some of that, and there's also some constitutional mandates because MoDOT's not controlled by the legislature. There's a commission that is appointed by the governor, and so you'd have to get somebody who's that's why I had a budget chairman, Mark, so I wouldn't have to know about all this stuff. You know?
So. Yeah, it gets complicated. That's for sure.
I recommend you get somebody on like a Rick Stream, you know, former budget chairman who was my budget chairman.
Yes.
Or Scott Fitzpatrick, the current budget chairman. Both brilliant fellows, and they can really dig deep and put you to sleep regarding budget appropriations.
All right. Well, Tim, I appreciate that explanation.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Mark, back to Arizona real quickly. That is an example of one of the U.S. Senate races that was looking really in trouble a few weeks ago. But, you know, similar to what we're seeing here in Missouri with McCaskill being called out for exactly who she is.
Exactly.
In her heart, a left-wing liberal. Martha McSally is surging ahead of crazy Kristen Sinema out there, who apparently was urging people to go join the Taliban a few years ago.
I saw that story. Yeah, she's really starting to slip in the polls. I think the Democrats are in panic mode in the Senate right now. Tim, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Great to talk to you as always.
Have a great day. The Tim Jones Show, Sundays 7 to 9 here on FM News Talk 97.1. Good information. More of your phone calls. I see a lot of folks holding here. 314-241-9797.
But I had heard that he body slammed a reporter. And he was way up. And I said, oh, this was like the day of the election or just before. And I said, oh, this is terrible. He's going to lose the election. Then I said, well, wait a minute. I know Montana pretty well. I think it might help him. And it did. Nah, he's a great guy. Tough cookie.
Oh, great Odin's raven.
So the president is taking heat this morning from NPR and some of the other mainstream media websites for daring to praise this guy who had an altercation with a reporter. Because, of course, violence against reporters directly affects the media. So they're immediately concerned about that. They didn't express the same concern when Eric Holder encouraged Democrats to kick conservatives or Republicans. Or Hillary Clinton talked about the fact that we can't be civil until we're back in control. Or Maxine Waters encourages people to go up and confront Republicans who they disagree with on policy issues to scream at them and run them out of restaurants. Media didn't seem all concerned about that at all. But heaven forbid the president praise somebody who got into an altercation with an aggressive reporter. Give me a break. Wow. I thought it was pretty funny, personally. Hey, Tim Jones, Speaker Jones, brought up some great points in that interview about these ballot issues. Folks, can I just, if you're in the sound of my voice, there's something very important that you need to understand. When you walk into the ballot box, if you live in St. Louis County, you are going to face at least 14 ballot initiatives that you have to make a decision on. So think about that. Probably more than that. It's probably more like 16. That's going to take you a while. If you're not familiar with them, you're going to walk in there and get caught with your pants down because you're not going to know what these issues are. I've got a voter guide. It's up on the website. I've even made a cheat sheet for you that whether you agree with me or not, but if you read it, I think you will, that you can print off and take with you to the ballot box. It's going to make the whole thing a lot easier. When we come back, we're going to talk to Rick Stream. He's the county executive. He's with the elections board right now, but he used to be on the budget committee down in Jeff City. We'll talk to him coming up.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
So anyway, I think that we owe the American people to be there for them, for their financial security, respecting the dignity and worth of every person in our country. And if there's some collateral damage for some others who do not share our view, well, so be it. But it shouldn't be our original purpose.
Wow. Did you hear that? That's Nancy Pelosi's warning to you of what's going to happen when she takes the gavel back in the House of Representatives.
We owe it to the American people. And if there's some collateral damage, so be it.
You are going to be the collateral damage, just so you got the message there. Nancy Pelosi's not even promising to be civil when she takes over again, just so you know what's at stake in these elections. Welcome back into the Mark Cox Morning Show. Glad that you're with us, and happy Friday morning to you. We've been talking about the debate last night between Josh Hawley and Claire McCaskill. I was a little disappointed myself. I mean, I thought Josh Hawley did a fine job. I thought he represented his views well. It's not a Hawley criticism. It's just that I felt, in general, Claire McCaskill's feet were not held to the fire at all last night. There was a missed opportunity there, in my opinion. I didn't think the moderators handled it well at all. I thought they ignored some major issues and opportunities, and we're going to talk more about that throughout the day. Now, big issues on the ballot this November 6th, 15 of them, as I count. If you're a voter in St. Louis County, you will face 15 issues on the ballot. Now, I've got a voter's guide out for you on our website, 971talk.com/Cox. We've even put a cheat sheet together for you. 15 issues. I'm telling you how I'll vote. You can make your own mind up, but you can print off this one-page cheat sheet if you want. Just to help yourself, because there are 15 of these. There's an Amendment 1 statewide, and there's a Prop 1 countywide. And don't be confused, okay? So I'm just trying to warn you about that. One of the big issues is the gas tax, and Tim Jones brought it up earlier. It involves how money would be distributed to MoDOT, and we're excited this morning to have Rick Stream with us. He, of course, is with the St. Louis County Board of Elections now, but a former state legislator. Rick, how are you?
Fine, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for getting up so early and doing this. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah. You know, yesterday when I talked to Speaker Jones, former Speaker Jones, he said to me, you know, the way MoDOT is funded is complicated. He said, the person you need to talk to is Rick Stream. Which is why I reached out to you and asked you to come on this morning.
Well, I appreciate that. Tim and I are good friends, and he appointed me budget chairman when he was speaker. So I do know a little bit about the budget, and I can't speak to that. So here we go.
Well, yeah, let's go, because this proposition that would raise the gas tax in the state would, that's Proposition D, would provide something on the level of $288 million or something for MoDOT to be distributed statewide. You know, my concern was, doesn't that make the budget a little more fungible? Like, for example, if this money floods in for transportation, do legislators down there have the ability to use money that would otherwise have gone to MoDOT for something else?
Well, here's the way it works right now. There's about $2.5 billion a year allocated towards MoDOT, and almost all of it comes from the gas taxes, the state gas tax and the federal gas tax, and that goes directly into that fund. There's another $100 million that comes from license fees. Really only $9 million of general revenue, which is sales tax and income tax, goes to into transportation, and that's for Amtrak only. So there's no GR that really goes to roads and highways. D will, Proposition D, as you mentioned, is $288 million, which will go to law enforcement. There's another $123 million that will be raised as part of this 10-cent increase over the next 4 years that will go to local governments for road construction and maintenance. So in answer to your question, though, right now, money is coming from the general revenue for the state highway patrol and these other areas. This money that will be raised for the gas tax through this increase in the gas tax will go directly to those two areas, and that will free up money that will go into roads then. So another $250 million approximately would be put into MoDOT's budget. So, you know, when you're dealing with general revenue, which is what this would be, as opposed to the state taxes and federal taxes on gas, you've always got that problem that money could be shifted around. But that's the way it works now, and that's the way, as I understand it, would work. And again, I haven't been down there in 4 years, so that's the way I understand it would work in the future with this 10-cent increase.
So to be clear that I understood you a minute ago, Rick, how much money are they currently getting from gas taxes in the state? Did you
$2.5 billion.
$2.5 billion?
Right. That's state taxes and federal gas tax. The federal gas tax is higher than the state gas tax. Missouri has one of the lowest state gas taxes in the country. So, and this would raise it, like I said, by 10 cents, 2.5 cents per year over the next 4 years.
I mean, I don't question that we have some infrastructure issues in the state. I don't. That right. Seems like an incredible amount of money. That's already going to transportation.
Well, it is. $2.5 billion is just a little bit under 10% of the total state budget, which I think this year was almost $28 billion. It is a lot of money. There's no question about it. I'm not advocating for or against it. I'm just telling you what the facts are and
right.
where the money's coming from. And it's our sales tax and income taxes, which provide the bulk of the state money for the budget, do not go right now to transportation for roads and constructions, things like that.
Okay,
it goes. It does pay for the highway patrol. That's the $250 million I said. That's the $288 million that's going to go for law enforcement. And that's going to be then. That money would be freed up to go into the state highway fund. That's the way that it was explained to me, and the way I read. Yesterday when I looked it up again, just to make sure.
Yeah, to be clear, a chunk of this money would go to the highway patrol so that other money that was going to them before can be freed up for
the
construction?
Money that's going into the highway patrol now is coming from the general revenue fund, and that will be freed up to go into the highway fund. So that's why they're saying in this case here, the proposition reads that it's going to go, the $288 million will be used to provide funding for Missouri State law enforcement, that's
right.
Highway patrol, and another $123 million will be to go to local governments for road and construction and maintenance. That the 200 $250 million or $288 million right now is coming out of general revenue for the highway patrol. Huh. So that $250 million will be freed up to go into the highway fund for highways.
Okay. Well, it's complicated. It is. And you know, some of us have been arguing. Well, maybe you know, there's the I mean, I'm personally not in favor of increasing the gas tax just because we can. I think maybe there could have been some other ways to do this, or a lesser tax at the very least. But I appreciate you explaining how this is going to go, Rick. Quickly, while I've got you on here,
okay.
When's the last time you can remember we had 15 ballot initiatives, like the St. Louis County ballot between statewide and county, will have 15 different initiatives people need to understand and vote on.
Nobody that's worked with the election board for any number of years remembers this long of a ballot. It's 19 inches, both front and back, on a paper ballot, and it's taken on average about 8 minutes for people to vote this entire ballot in our absentee voting right now that's going on in the office. So we recommend that people go to our website and download the ballot for their area. They can do that by going to our website, which is www.stlouisco.com, yourgovernment/elections, and click on the sample ballot and get their ballot, and they can mark that ballot, print it out and mark it, and then take it head into the polls. In addition, we're going to send them a notice of election card starting next Monday, which will have the sample ballot on it, and we recommend people definitely mark that ballot, sample ballot, and bring it to the polls, and it'll speed up their voting time. We're going to have long lines. We expect a high turnout, 50% to 60%. We do need more poll workers, Mark. Definitely, if they want to be a poll worker, give our office a call, 314-615-1800 or 1955, because we're expecting a large turnout. And if people are ready, if people have studied the issues like you've got it on your website, they'll be able to vote much quicker. We're going to have a tremendous number of paper ballots for folks because we know the lines for the machines will be long.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a busy day.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I looked at my sample ballot. It's a very easy thing to do on your website as well. And I think it's important because there are also a number of like judgeships you have to vote on. And most people have never heard of any of these judges. They don't know what to do.
That's correct. There's on average a minimum of 45 things that people can vote on their ballot, up to 52 different items, depending on which municipality you live in. So it's a long ballot. Judges, propositions, like you said, 15 state and local propositions, and then all the candidates, of course. So it's a very long ballot, and we, again, recommend people go and print out the sample ballot from our website, or use the one that every voter will get, a notice of election card with the sample ballot attached.
Well, Rick Stream, listen, I appreciate your time so early in the morning and important issues there. Thank you.
You're welcome, Mark. Thanks
you
for
bet.
Me.
Absolutely. Rick Stream, who's with the St. Louis County Board of Elections, used to be with state government. You understand how complicated this funding thing is for MoDOT, right? Think about the injection of cash they're looking at here. $2.5 billion goes to it right now. 314-241-9797. Quick break. I'll get to your phone calls coming up. All right. Welcome back. Let me get to a couple of callers here real quick. Paul, good morning to you.
Hey, Mark. How you doing this morning?
Great. Thank you.
Hey, just I just wanted to recap what your guest had said earlier before the break. So if I understand correctly, they're going to take the money that they're currently taking out of general revenue to pay the highway patrol, and then a new gas tax is going to go to pay them, and the money that was paying the highway patrol, they're going to put into the highway fund. Is that correct? Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, that's how I understood Rick Stream to explain that.
So my comment on that is, that seems kind of shady. Why do we have to stop paying A and take it from C to pay A, and then take A that was paying it and put it to B? Why don't we just take the money and put it directly to the highway patrol? That just seems really shady, moving, shuffling money needlessly. That in itself makes me not want to vote for it, because now they're setting it up, in my opinion, to where they can take that $250 million additional money, or wherever the money additionals were for the highway, and do as they please with it, because now it's not protected under where the gas tax has to go to certain things.
I can't disagree with you. And I listened to him too, Paul, and I think he was doing his best to explain it, and he said that it's been 4 years since he was down there, but that's his understanding of how it would work.
I just want to make sure that's why I understood that.
Yeah.
Thank
you for the call. No, I appreciate that. And I've got to get to a break here. I ran long with Rick Stream. I apologize for that. But, Eric, if you want to hold on, I'll get to your calls. And I've got more time for calls this hour at 314-241-9797. Let's make sure we understand this. I'm a no on this gas tax at this point. Nobody's convinced me yet. But if I hear Rick Stream right, a big chunk of this is dedicated to the Highway Patrol. I don't want to hurt law enforcement, but their argument is that it's to fix infrastructure. So we'll get to all of that and more. 314-241-9797. I've heard that rumor somewhere. Thank you, Colonel West. Appreciate that. Hey, Forbes magazine has some tips for people who plan to play Mega Millions and Powerball this week.
Some like secrets on how to win?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
So, right. First of all, you take whatever amount of money you're expecting to spend on it, and you roll it up and you smoke it, because you'll probably enjoy that more than your chances of winning Mega Millions or Powerball.
You might if you're in Canada.
Boy, you could put your money up and smoke up there in a hurry, couldn't you? You have to tell that story, Denise, about the Girl Scout.
Oh, yeah. So I saw that on Fox 2 this morning, but it was a girl. It's whatever the Canadian Girl Scout thing is, but she went outside a dispensary there, you know, and sold cookies in no time at all.
Yeah.
all of her inventory gone.
Sold it out in record time.
Yeah.
I told you, that's all you got to do. If you know there's a dispensary going in,
with some snacks.
The real estate next door is very important. You need to have a chips and snacks store right next door.
Yep.
That's what's going to happen. Hey, let's get to our friend Jennifer Kashinka, who is on the phone with me again today due to a little technical difficulty. Jennifer, hold on.
Sorry.
Had to get to the
service around here.
I jumped the gun there a little bit. I apologize. How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's Friday, so we can just let it all roll off our backs, right?
I cannot speak until I hear the bells.
That's right. True. That's part of the rule. Yep. Have you, I have to ask this, have you bought a Mega Millions ticket or are you a lottery player?
No.
She's too smart.
Well, I mean, if you don't play, you can't win. I mean, lightning can strike sometimes.
Throw the money away.
No. Rather spend it on Rutgers football tickets, wouldn't you?
No, not that.
But. Oh, okay. All right. What's going on out there?
Futures are pointing to a higher open this morning after stocks closed sharply lower yesterday. The Dow Industrials tumbled 327. The Nasdaq dropped 157. China's economic growth sank to its lowest level since the global financial crisis in the latest quarter, adding to challenges for its communist leaders as they fight a tariff battle with Washington. The world's second largest economy expanded by 6.5% in the 3 months ending in September. That was down from 6.7% the previous quarter and the slowest rate since early 2009. China's economy already was cooling due to a clampdown on credit to rein in a debt boom before President Trump's tariff hikes on Chinese imports in a fight over Beijing's technology policy. Dow DuPont's agriculture unit is taking a $4.6 billion charge after the business lowered its long-term expectations on sales and profits, reflecting the many challenges facing seed and pesticide makers. 5 consecutive years of bumper crops in North and South America have swelled storage bins and pushed down crop prices, forcing farmers to scale back spending. Dow DuPont shares down 3% in pre-market trading on the news. The Justice Department says Starkist has agreed to plead guilty to a felony antitrust offense for fixing prices on canned tuna and faces a fine of up to $100 million. The DOJ filed the charge in a California federal court, alleging that Starkist and others conspired to fix, raise, and maintain the price of packaged seafood from 2011 until at least the end of 2013. The charging papers did not offer details on how much consumers may have overpaid. Amazon.com executives have made another round of visits to several of the 20 finalists for its $5 billion second headquarters project as it nears a decision in a process that has stretched over more than a year. The Wall Street Journal says the visits over the past couple of months included Chicago, New York City, and Newark, New Jersey. In addition, Amazon has been following up with other locations, including Miami and the Washington, D.C. area. and a masterpiece by Jackson Pollock that sold for $306 in 1950 to former Vice President Nelson Rockefeller is expected to go for at least $18 million when it's offered for sale for the first time in decades. The painting, called Number 16, was donated by Rockefeller in 1952 to an art museum in Rio de Janeiro. The museum says it has to part with the painting now so it can raise enough money to keep its doors open. Mark?
Yeah, it's good to be a Rockefeller, huh? They made a lot of good decisions.
306 to $18 million.
Wow. That's a good investment, I have to say. Hey, Jen, have a great weekend.
You too. Enjoy.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But we're going to check in with in traffic with in just a minute with Frank in there, because there's been it looks like the ramp from northbound 270 to 44 has been shut down because of a wreck. So I'm sure we'll have more on that here in just a couple of minutes. So stay tuned for that. We got all that coming up. Phones have lit up this morning. People want to talk about this tax increase and all of that. So I want to get back to a couple of phone calls here real quick. Let me get to Eric on line one. Eric, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. I am probable no, but undecided.
On the gas tax?
Yes.
Yes.
My experience tells me one thing. Anything that is general revenue funded, until it is alternate source paid for, is not going to be subsidized at all. That $288 million that's currently going to Highway Patrol is just another boon for the government to buy more votes, because it's not going to be increased unless the alternate source increases, just like the lottery did with the schools. If the schools had a $700 million budget prior to Missouri Lottery, us getting gambling in the state, until that source generates $700 million, there's not a single additional penny going to that budget.
Okay.
It's the same thing here as far as I'm concerned. That's typical politics.
Well, no, I understand that concept. You know, I think a lot of the local municipalities are backing this because they looked at these numbers. The governor, when he came in here, brought in a sheet of paper. Gosh, it must have been an inch thick, estimating how much local municipalities would get out of this. St. Louis County would get, between the county and the 91 municipalities, something like $16 million in additional revenues in the first year to spend toward infrastructure. And they're all pumped about it. So,
and I get that. Well, they're also pushing the fact that we have the lowest gas taxes. That may be true. But we also have the highest sales taxes in the region here, or in the state here in St. Louis vicinity. We also have the additional 1%. Plus, now they're starting to charge for services that were never charged for before. And the $11 for refuse is a perfect example. Not a dollar of that went to it. That went to general fund in the city as well.
Sure.
So, you know, just another good example.
You bet. Eric, thank you for the phone call. I think I love when I see that spark, that realization go off in the eyes of a young person when they start to pay taxes for the first time. So I'm having a conversation with a young lady that just started working in the building. I'm not going to identify her. And she's like, do you know that I found out that I owed back taxes to the city for this stupid earnings tax? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know about it. And I live in the city, but I was working outside of the city. And then they came back to me and said, oh, by the way, you owe us $1,200. $1,200. Why do I have to pay them $1,200? I'm like, listen. I went back to my favorite Parks and Rec thing of all time, right?
It's never too early to learn that the government is a greedy piglet that suckles on a taxpayer's teat until they have sore chapped nipples.
Welcome to the pig pen. That's what I said to her. That's just one example. And I said, and it'll never get any better because the city's budget depends 1/3 on that earnings tax. There's no way they could ever get rid of it. They can't. They have to have it. And the sales tax in the city that's, what, 10 cents on the dollar now or 11 cents on the dollar? There's a reason Prop Z is only in the county, because they don't want to ask city voters to add another half cent to their sales tax they're already paying out the wazoo, right? It's crazy. That's why people get fed up with this stuff. All right, I'm going to get to a quick break. Lynn, Kevin, I promise. I'm going to get your calls coming up here next. 314-241-9797.
If I have a criticism of Senator McCaskill, it's not that she is a bad person. She's not. I think she's a good person. It's not that her record has been terrible. She has had 36 years of distinguished service to this state and this country. But she does not represent this state anymore. She does not represent the people of Missouri. She has not accepted what the people said in 2016. She has not worked with this president or this administration on any major priority. She has not stood up and voted, whether it's the Supreme Court or Waters of the United States, which she voted to keep, by the way. She has simply not voted with this state anymore. She's become a party line liberal, and that is, I think, the biggest criticism I have.
You know, I thought Josh Hawley did pretty good last night, but he really gave her a pass on a couple of big stories, like Obamacare. Can I just point out the biggest, possibly, maybe after the New Deal, the biggest scam ever perpetrated on this nation, and the Democrats got away with it because of Nancy Pelosi, who's about to be the House Speaker again.
We have to pass the bill so we know what's in it.
And now with this is what it's like with entitlement programs, because that's what this is, a subsidized taxpayer sucking entitlement program, because you can only afford Obamacare if you don't work. And Claire McCaskill admitted it last night. Well, I know premiums have gone up 125% for some people, but that's only if you're not getting a subsidy. So we're admitting to it. Why didn't somebody shove that back down her throat when she said that? It's a disaster. The Democrats passed this for one reason, because they knew that once they started this giveaway program for health care, it was going to drive the private insurers out of the market, and they would pave the way for single payer. And it's a scam is what it is, because now people think if you take it away, you're taking something away from them that they deserve, that we never should have dealt with to begin with. It's just crazy. Hey, Lynn, welcome into the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. I had a son. This isn't what I called for, but I have a a child whose family was affected by Obamacare because they were salespeople, and they didn't offer big group health.
Group health plan, yeah.
And, you know, for Claire to just kind of throw it out there that it went up 125%, like, well, you know, what do you expect? There's not that many people who are affected, but there's a ton of people who are affected.
That only affects 5%, is what she said, of Missourians.
Yeah,
you tell me 95% of Missourians get subsidized Obamacare? I don't believe that. That's false.
That is false. That is a lie.
Yeah, and Lynn, I'm gonna run out of time here. So quickly, what's your point?
Didn't you had the governor on a couple of days ago?
Yes.
And he indicated that he's for this because he's going to try his best and his hardest to make sure that this money from the gas tax is dedicated to transportation and infrastructure.
That's what he said.
Yes. Yeah. And it indicated the gentleman you just had on, Mr. Stream. I just wondered, did I mishear him? Did my ears not get it right? That he seemed to say that maybe a portion or all of this would have a tendency to be distributed in a way that is not intended.
And I appreciate you asking that question, because it gives me an opportunity to clear something up here, Lynn.
Okay.
Rick Stream texted me this morning after a conversation. This is what he said, basically. Currently, the Highway Patrol is funded out of the State Highway Fund, which gets its $2.5 billion from state and federal taxes on fuel. Prop D would raise money to go directly to the Highway Patrol, thus freeing up the $250 million currently dedicated to the Highway Patrol to be used for highway and road repairs. So it's just basically shifting monies around is what it's
doing.
I'm
so glad I heard that correctly. Okay.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much.
Fun thing all over again.
Yeah. Go to the website, 971talk.com/Cox. The voter guide's on there. I got a little cheat sheet for you and links to all of your ballots. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
I do not support cutting Social Security or Medicare. I don't support any changes to those programs for anyone who is currently receiving benefits or who is going to be receiving benefits anytime in the near future. I think it is vital that we protect these programs that Americans have paid into with their hard-earned cash. One of the things that I disagree with Senator McCaskill about is that she voted to cut $716 billion from Medicare in order to pay for Obamacare. I think that was wrong. I think those cuts ought to be restored.
Josh Hawley last night at the debate talking about the shell game that is Obamacare, and you know, probably what we needed to talk about an equal amount last night is the tax increases that were incrementally put in place with Obamacare that we're still paying, that have still never been removed. The mandate's been removed, but all the taxes are still going into it. I want all of those reversed. There's a lot to talk about with Obamacare, and all Claire McCaskill wanted to do last night was defend it. It's just maddening. We're going to talk more about that debate here because we have a special guest on this Friday. What do you want from me? I'm
not a married but sweetheart. Back up, you creep. So beat the drum with me. Get away from me.
Annie Fry, good Friday morning to you.
Good morning.
Hey, were you up late watching the Senate debate?
You know, I didn't get to watch the whole thing yet, so by 12 o'clock today, I will have rewatched it. But I was seeing a lot of reaction to it on social media, and the reviews out there from, you know, just average folks, people who are going to get the opportunity to vote here in a couple of weeks, was that Claire McCaskill didn't really do herself any favors.
Well, I didn't think so. I thought she was sort of on the defensive all night, and the parallel I drew to it is sort of like in a boxing ring when a boxer backs up against the ropes and puts their arms up, right? A little rope-a-dope, I think, that was what Ali used to call it. There was an opportunity to land some body blows, and I'm not sure that Josh Hawley took advantage of that completely last night. I wish he had been a little more aggressive with her. He was almost, I wouldn't say conciliatory, but he was very complimentary of her, and I think he must have been coached to do that for some reason.
Yeah, body blows doesn't really seem at this point in time to be Josh Hawley's style. And we live in a time now where all we expect are body blows. That's what a lot of us want to see when we watch these things, mostly for the entertainment value. And I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to see that, just because that's kind of the nature of the business right now. And if you can't do that, you might run the risk of maybe just having the election season be the sum total of your political career. If Claire McCaskill wins, then the body blows might be one of the reasons why that's the case. However, right now, when I look at Josh Hawley and I look at Claire McCaskill, I feel like Josh Hawley is in control of the situation right now. Josh Hawley has the momentum with the Project Veritas videos that we saw this week coming out about how in bed Claire McCaskill is with Planned Parenthood and how in support she is of trying to control your Second Amendment rights. There's a lot of things that we know about Claire McCaskill. Those are things that we knew about Claire McCaskill before Project Veritas put these videos
right
out.
Right.
It wasn't really new information, but it is confirmation, and it is out there. And Claire McCaskill, for whatever reason, I don't understand. I think it's a misstep. She's saying, yeah, let's do an investigation. It's like, okay, yeah, we can keep talking about these for the next couple weeks. If you really want us to, you can put this front and center in the news. And Josh Hawley is, to me, he's like not going anywhere near the Todd Akin territory. I think that this is more of a reaction to what happened 6 years ago, and Josh Hawley's playing it safe, and he and his people must think that that's the right way to go about it.
Yeah, must be. You know, I watched the debate intermittently. I would pause it and go get something done and come back and finish. I watched all of it. I might have missed a minute or two if I stepped out of the room of what they talked about. But the Post-Dispatch article this morning confirmed what I noticed during the debate is that nobody, the moderators, Josh Hawley, Claire McCaskill, nobody brought up the Project Veritas video. Now, a couple days ago, Claire McCaskill is calling for a special prosecutor to be appointed by Josh Hawley. I thought sure she'd bring it up last night, but she didn't. And the moderators, I mean, you had Judy Woodruff from, you know, NPR in Washington. You had Joe Manies, who used to be a political reporter for The Post when I was a reporter for KMOV, and now she works for St. Louis Public Radio, I believe. And then you had Mike Bush from Channel 5. None of those moderators in an hour and a half debate thought to ask her a couple of simple questions like, as you brought up, Senator McCaskill, can you please explain to us how Planned Parenthood is funneling money surreptitiously into your campaign so that it's not obvious to the public? Or Senator McCaskill, can you please explain why one of your campaign staffers was caught on camera saying that you want to ban all semi-automatic rifles. Not a single one of those three people thought that was an important question.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of a double-edged sword with the Project Veritas videos. They expose what it looks like in the background, but there's always questions, an eyebrow raised about the events that led up to getting that information. You know, if Claire McCaskill wants a lawsuit or an investigation into what actually took place there, then, okay, fine, whatever. But if we find out that this person lied about his resume or falsified some documents to get in there, you know, that's wrong, and that shouldn't have happened. And I'm not saying the ends justify the means here, but the reality of the situation is we have these conversations on tape. This is what people did say. And at the end, if Claire McCaskill were to you know, essentially win after some investigation on exposing the hows and the whys of the way this was obtained, you still aren't addressing what was actually said, the news that has actually been made out of these videos. So I don't know if there was an agreement made beforehand or why that would be the case, why it wouldn't be addressed in front of all those people. But it's a pretty simple question without even saying anything about the videos. Do you accept money from Planned Parenthood in any fashion? Do you support Planned Parenthood in any fashion? And they're important questions that need to be asked, and I'm looking forward to going over the debate as a whole today and seeing everything that was said in its entirety. But from what I understand, Josh Hawley, the presentation that he's had this entire time has been extremely safe. It's been extremely measured. And honestly, just from as an Illinois voter who I wish, you know, and I know what you're going to say, but I wish I had a vote for Josh Hawley. I wish I had the opportunity to cast a ballot for him. It's nice to see somebody who wants to go to Washington, D.C. that isn't as sensationalized right now as everything else is out there right now. There's so many highs, so many lows, and I think Josh Hawley is a steady horse, and I know he's not, you know, in lockstep with every single thing that every other conservative out there has, but that's not really the way politics is supposed to work. We're all individuals. We have different perspectives, different reasons for believing the things that we do, and we all have our own approaches. Josh Hawley is no different than that, and he's such a better choice, such a better option for Missouri than Claire McCaskill.
Well, he did make that case last night, if nothing else. I was hoping to get him on the radio this morning. I tried to get him on in the 8 o'clock hour, but apparently he's not available. So we'll see. Maybe Monday we'll get him back on the air. Let's talk election issues for a minute. I've got a voter guide up on the website for the Missouri side of the river. I talked to Rick Stream this morning. He's the election director for St. Louis County. There are going to be at least 15 just ballot issues, ballot initiatives that are on this St. Louis County ballot. There are probably 5 or 6 or 7 judges. This thing's going to be a couple of pages long. If anybody walks into the voting booth and they've not read up on these different propositions, they're going to have no idea which way to vote based on the wording of the summaries, which is why I put this voter's guide together for people. I think it's going to be important. We even put together a cheat sheet. So you read the whole thing, and if you agree or disagree with me, you can take the cheat sheet in and, you know, write how you're going to vote on it so that you don't have to spend all day reading every single detail on all these propositions.
Yeah, you know, and it's a great thing to have. It's a great piece of information for voters to use to help educate themselves. They can read along with what you've put together, and then they can make a decision based on that. And, you know, I got a question for you. How long did it take you to put that whole thing together?
Oh, I've been working on it for 3 or 4 days. I mean, I went back and looked at I read each initiative in its entirety, so I was sure I understood what it would do. Then I kind of explained it in layman's terms and told people how I'm going to vote.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. Voting is it's not as simple as showing up and filling in a circle or you know, putting pen to some electronic device and checking a ballot. There's a lot of thought that needs to go into it. There's a lot of effort that needs to go into it, which is why a lot of people just don't do it. It's just like, especially when people are so tired
of the way politics is done today. It's almost like they're not, people out there will not vote as a statement. And it's really the wrong statement. I understand the frustration that goes into trying to consume this news cycle. It's pretty tireless. Nancy Pelosi's out there being Nancy Pelosi again, talking about how the Democrats need to win, even if that means that there's going to be some collateral damage to what we have right now. I mean, she terrifies me. She is nuts. And the Nancy Pelosi's of the world are waiting with excitement for the possibility of being able to take back the House of Representatives. For what purpose? To try to impeach the president. That's the goal. There are so many things facing the country right now, and these ballot initiatives are what I'm talking about. They seem like small peanuts in the grand scheme of the national politics, but those initiatives, those ballot measures, are going to affect your life in a much more impactful way than the next 2 years of bickering that's going to take place in the House of Representatives if the Democrats take control, because they're not going to get anywhere with that. It's just going to slow everything to a halt. We've got success with this president in office right now. He needs to have the support. He needs to have the Republican majorities in the House and the Senate. That is understood. But it's those types of things that people do really need to take a look at. I'll be doing one for Illinois over the weekend, and if you go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/AndyFryShow, I got something in the mail yesterday, and people all across the state of Illinois got something in the mail from Sam McCann, who I had on my show earlier this week, and that interview kind of turned into a little bit of a hostile conversation. Sam McCann sent me something yesterday. Sam McCann says that I shouldn't be a rhino, don't vote for rhino Republicans, and he lumps in the state House candidates in Illinois. He goes after Dwight Kaye and Mike Babcock. Who is this guy? Who the hell does he think he is to come into Southern Illinois, where he says that he's a Southern Illinois representative, and start talking about these House representatives who are Republicans, where that is the one place where Illinois can gain some power, is to diminish Mike Madigan's evil reign in the Illinois House. It's with folks like Dwight Kaye in the 112th taking out Katie Stewart, and Mike Babcock in the 111th taking out Monica Bristow, and Doug Jamieson and Jason Maboch. These are Republicans who can take blue seats in the House, and Sam McCann, who's running on some conservative party ticket, is spending money to assault my mailbox with stuff saying not to vote for him. This guy's a fraud, he's a phony, and he needs to be called out for it. That's
wow.
The type of stuff I'll put in my Illinois voter guide over this weekend to put right next to yours.
Good for you. Yeah, people have been asking. They've been asking, can somebody do one for Illinois? So I'm glad that you're doing that. Speak for just a minute before we run out of time. You have a great event coming up next week. I think Bruce Rauner is going to be there telling people a rally they can come to, where they just stand up and say, listen, enough's enough. Well, we live in Illinois. We're sick to death of being taxed for every breath we take.
Yep, I was just reading an article about the St. Clair County 5% property tax hike that they're going to be dealing with. And to put it into perspective, property taxes have increased 200% more than property values, which is a significant problem for anybody who's trying to, you know, make a living while being a homeowner. And the idea of this October 24th, it's next Wednesday, it's in Collinsville, Illinois, at the American Legion there. It's What we're calling it is a taxpayer revolt, an Illinois taxpayer revolt. And I'll tell you what, you don't need to be a Republican to be fed up with taxes in the state of Illinois. There's one issue that is going to decide the fate, the future of the state of Illinois, and that's fiscal management. The Democrats have been in control for so very long, decades in Illinois, and they can't handle it. It's all under Mike Madigan. Now, I've not been a staunch supporter of Bruce Rauner. I have a lot of issues with some of the social things he's done, but getting that flyer in the mail yesterday from Sam McCann, talking to me about not voting for the very good, men and women who have put their hat in the ring to try to diminish the power of Mike Madigan. It shows you the state of affairs right now in
sure.
Illinois. It shows you what the Republican Party looks like in Illinois. Sam McCann is supposed to be a Republican senator in the state Senate, and this is the type of stuff that's going on.
Bruce Rauner is a block to Mike Madigan. I don't know if what else he has in store for Illinois in the next 4 years, and I know that J.B. Pritzker is going to be the worst thing for Illinois' future.
A disaster.
He'll be at that rally next Wednesday, and we're looking forward to it among many other candidates who are running to for lower taxes.
Outstanding, Annie. We'll look forward to it. Thank you for doing that, and have a great show today. I'll be listening.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You bet. Have a good day. Annie Fry there, of course, on a noon to 3 every day here on FM News Talk 97.1. Her Illinois voter guide coming out probably Monday. So stay tuned for that. You can find it at 971talk.com along with my voter guide and my cheat sheet. And we'll get to more of your phone calls. We're going to talk to Cassie Smedley from the RNC coming up. J.J. Carafano about 8:10. You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
When I shook his hand, I have to tell you, I've never told this. I shook his hand, and I said, Brett, congratulations. I've chosen you. And I have a list of 23 people or so that are phenomenal. Top students, top everything, top judges, all judges, I think. All judges. Doesn't have to be a judge, by the way, but there's something nice about putting judges on the Supreme Court, right? I don't know. Somehow... I think putting a businessman would be nice, or a woman. How about a businesswoman?
Nice. You know what was interesting last night in that Senate debate between Josh Hawley and Claire McCaskill is the Kavanaugh nomination didn't ever really come up. It wasn't asked by the moderators. Josh Hawley might have brought up one time that she didn't support, the Trump's pick to the Supreme Court in his argument that she's been anti-Trump, but no, why was that not an issue?
That's
I would have
weird.
Tried to rub that salt in the wound.
I hadn't even thought about that. That was
know. It did not come up. Another thing on my list of things they didn't get to. All right. Let me get to my guest, Cassie Smedley, joining us right now, National Press Secretary for the GOP. And how are you, Cassie?
Hey, good morning, guys. Great to be with you.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you. I don't know. Did you see any of the highlights from our Senate debate last night?
I did, of course. And I had that same thought with you. I could not believe that Kavanaugh didn't come up. I thought it was a real miss by the moderators. And I don't know if it was a timing issue. But for our part, it remains one of the biggest motivating factors of why this, not just this race, but across the country, races have tightened or flipped in the direction for Republicans. I know that Josh has been pretty much ahead in this race all along, but momentum has really swung in Republicans' favor because of the Kavanaugh confirmation. So very strange that it didn't come up.
Yeah, I think for my purposes, if I was in Hawley's campaign, I would have made it a point to bring it up more pointedly by name. I didn't hear that. Maybe I missed it because I didn't watch probably every single minute, but I didn't step away very often. The other thing that really didn't come up was these Project Veritas videos that got released. Mm-hmm. They pointed out some things that are going to rub a lot of Missourians the wrong way. And I think it was a missed opportunity to ask Senator McCaskill, because the moderators kind of dropped the ball on this too. Somebody on your campaign claimed that Planned Parenthood is funding you through other means so that people don't know where the money's coming from. Isn't that a campaign finance violation?
Right. And it's not just somebody. Many somebodies, including the senator herself, hinted as much or said as much that Planned Parenthood absolutely supports Senator McCaskill, but you know they just understand that that's not popular in Missouri and with Missourians. So they found other ways to get her the money to make sure that she's well cared for. That's incredible. I mean, not just that they're back-channeling their donations, but that the senator and her staff know that her position on abortion is in opposition to the majority of Missourians, or at least her cozying up with Planned Parenthood is not something that we care for. That, to me, was the most incredible part of that, setting the money part aside, that she knows she's on the wrong side of this issue. How is that? You know, you got to think, how many other issues is that the case for Claire McCaskill? And I think, you know, Josh will learn for the Kansas City debate not to rely on the moderators to give the questions that everybody assumes they would give, because they're the topical issues. You just brought up two that seemed like gimme issues. So I have no doubt that that's going to be brought up much more heavily in the Kansas City debate. But those are two big marks on McCaskill right now, her vote against Judge Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, and also this
actually, I think they kind of go together. The backdoor funding through Planned Parenthood, from Planned Parenthood, I think that was a big reason for her vote against Judge Kavanaugh. And that's important for Missourians to know.
A quick question on funding. I saw a headline on Drudge yesterday that I guess collectively it said Democrats had raised $1 billion for this election. And I'm thinking to myself, well, one thing is for sure, and Hillary Clinton proved this without a doubt, raising the most money doesn't guarantee you a victory. But you and I've talked about the fact that the RNC has also broken records.
That's right. But you touched on a key point. If money was everything, Hillary Clinton would be president.
Yeah.
But what happened in 2016 is that you had a really great candidate, Donald Trump, and you had a really great infrastructure, the RNC, supporting that candidate. We worked hand in glove. That's continuing to happen right now with Republicans up and down the ballot. We've got that great infrastructure that helped propel Donald Trump to now President Trump, and we've only expanded it and bettered it with pouring more of our record-breaking fundraising money into the data and expanding the ground game. Do you know that we have 200,000 traditional volunteers that we have trained and activated across the country? And that's in addition to our traditional staff out in the field and then our highly trained fellows that we call them.
Yeah.
These are just the guys who are knocking doors and making phone calls. 200,000, half of them millennials, by the way. That speaks to what you get when you've got an organized infrastructure. And so in Missouri, for example, great state party, great state team. When you got a great candidate at the top of the ticket like Josh Hawley, you're going to see a great benefit between an awesome candidate and a great ground structure. That's the benefit of that money advantage. And when you're talking about Democrats, and no joke, they've done a good job fundraising, but they don't have a centralized infrastructure that's helping to support the grassroots and the volunteers and giving them really good data to work with. That doesn't exist in the Democrat Party.
Interesting.
And one little anecdote too to add. I don't know if you saw Beto O'Rourke. You know, he's running against Ted Cruz and running pretty far behind at this point down in Texas. But he's raised all these millions of dollars, most of it from outside Texas. Hollywood and others have donated to him. And he got asked the other night, do you think you should give that to some of the other Democrat candidates who could use some of the money? And he goes, no, those people donated to me. So there's money, but it's not all in the right places. I'm sure there's some other folks in competitive seats that wish they were getting some of that war chest too, and they're not.
Yeah,
but
maybe
that was funny.
Maybe some of that came from that crazy former Mexican president who's apparently endorsed Beto O'Rourke.
That's interesting because, as a reminder to anybody from Texas listening, Beto O'Rourke is happy for people to think he's Hispanic, but he's not.
Yeah, so that's a great point. Stanton. Hey, before I let you go, Cassie, I wanted you to hear this bite from last night and get your reaction to it.
So last year you went with Paul Ryan, who's a Boy Scout, and that's fine, but a little boring. So this year you wanted to spice things up again, right? I get it. You wanted an Indian woman, but Elizabeth Warren failed her DNA test.
Nikki Haley killed it last night at that Al Smith dinner, and they've got, I mean, there are people all over the country are going, wow. The potential there for a candidacy at some point for a bigger seat.
Well, I think that there is a bright future for Nikki Haley. I love that she has said, first, I'm all in for the president. I've got my future and he's got his. And so we're going to make sure he's reelected first.
Right.
But how much fun is it right now in the Republican Party? Nikki Haley, Lindsey Graham, Susan Collins, to say nothing of the president himself. There's so much excitement in the Republican Party right now. And then you look to the left, and there was a piece yesterday about how the folks who helped Bernie Sanders with his campaign in 2016 don't want to be with him in 2020. And that you've got Elizabeth Warren, who you've got so many Democrats who are just shaking their heads. They cannot believe that she bungled this. The timing of it is horrible. They're
yes.
so upset with her. Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, completely falling flat with voters. So it's a really fun time, I think, to be a Republican and to be this, as much as Democrats hate it, we're this really inclusive party who kind of love all of our leaders, and the Democrats are fighting for one leadership position. So I love it. I haven't yet seen her Al Smith in a remark, so I look forward to watching those with my coffee this morning.
Well worth it. Listen, I appreciate your time, Cassie. Have a great day.
Thanks, and have a great weekend.
You bet. Cassie Smedley there from the RNC, at CM Smedley on Twitter, if you want to follow him, and at GOP. Yeah, if you haven't seen the Nikki Haley thing, she went on to finish. We didn't. The rest of the bite was you wanted an Indian woman, but Elizabeth Warren actually failed her DNA test. She said, actually, when the president found out I was Indian American, he asked me if I was from the same tribe as Elizabeth Warren. So clearly, this is a running joke even in the White House.
With Elizabeth
Warren.
She was funny. She looked so great.
She did. Yeah,
she
did.
She looked fantastic.
She really did.
She's cool. I like her.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let me get to a break. 314-241-9797. Mike, Kevin, stay on the line. We'll get to your calls coming up. Hey, glad you're back with us. Kevin's been holding on for quite a while. Kevin, thank you for your time. What's going on?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me on. Just regarding the debate last night, I feel Holly really missed a prime moment to highlight Claire's wishy-washy decision-making. When it comes to Saudi Arabia, she wanted to hold Saudis accountable at all costs. But yet, when it comes to China, she don't want to hold them equally as accountable. So I feel he really missed a key moment to highlight her wishy-washy back and forth.
Well, there were a couple times when I thought that we missed an opportunity for a jab or a counterpunch. Excuse the boxing analogy, but I wish he had been a little more aggressive with her. But I'm guessing they had a strategy in mind through this. I mean, I thought he did fine presenting his point, Kevin. But we did miss some opportunities last night. Thank you for the call.
You bet.
I appreciate that. I'll get to more of this in my soapbox here coming up in the next hour, what I thought about the debate. So tell you what, J.J. Carafano is still ahead. We're going to get him on the air about 8:10 and more of your phone calls at 314-241-9797.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Call me with advice about the speech. They all said the same thing. Do not, under any circumstances, make any jokes about the president. So good night, everybody.
Nikki Haley sitting next to Cardinal Dolan at this Al Smith dinner last night, and she just crushed it.
I
thought she did a good job. She was funny. It's like a burden's been lifted off of her, I guess, that she's a short-timer now, and she was just having some fun with it.
Mm-hmm. It made me like her even more.
And looking...
I know, I already liked her so much already, and if it was possible to like her more, I do. She did.
I know, she did.
Well, it was fun because you always see her in these very serious roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Serious, hardcore speeches, so this, like, comedian Nikki Haley was cool.
Nice to see the other side.
Yeah.
That's true. Hey, let's get to our guest, please. At J.J. Carafano.
You know, I was born in the South. South Bronx.
Jim Carafano, how are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm thinking about switching to Janis Joplin, though. That was pretty cool.
Wasn't that cool? I like it.
Man, I forgot that.
Good to hear some Janis Joplin every once in a while. It's good
Didn't
music.
Did she play at Woodstock? Didn't...
I think so, yeah. I'm pretty sure she did.
That was like a big thing for her?
Yeah. I had Grace Slick on my show one time when I worked in television, and I said, about all those rumors from Woodstock and the San Francisco in the 60s, she said, it's all true. So I didn't even have to mention one specifically.
When were the 60s? Yeah. They were like somewhere, they were before or after the 50s.
Yeah, it was somewhere there. It was all a blur for all of them. That's for sure. That is for sure. So, you know, I've been wanting to talk to somebody about this Saudi Arabian situation.
Sure.
We had a Senate debate in Missouri last night. And instead of asking our sitting senator, Claire McCaskill, you know, about some of the revelations this week about Planned Parenthood and her idea to ban semi-automatic rifles, the most pressing question that Judy Woodruff could come up with was, what would you do about, you know, the Khashoggi case in Saudi Arabia? That's the question they ask. I don't know how relevant that is to Missouri voters, but that's the situation everybody's discussing right now. Where are you on it?
You know, I'm the son of a cop. You know, my dad, I grew up with a cop, and I always looked at law enforcement through the eyes of how law enforcement people think about these things, not right. through how everybody that watches an episode of Law and Order does. And so when you learn when you're doing a criminal investigation is that you let the facts drive the conclusions. You don't start with a conclusion and then go out and seek to confirm it. And I think even in this incident, we've had multiple episodes where we've seen that happen. So, for example, there were all kinds of reporting that, well, Pompeo has the tape and he's listened to the thing. And then Pompeo said, nobody gave me anything. And then the Turkish government said, we haven't provided this to anything. So we've seen all what are the facts that we know is the guy went in. We know who the guy was and we're almost positive he didn't come out. Everything else is really conjecture. So this is an actual murder investigation. And the appropriate answer for a U.S. senator to give is we should press our government to get the facts as we know them. And when we come back in the session after the midterm elections, you know, we should evaluate the evidence and take appropriate action. That's what she should say.
What, though, Jim, for the average person who hasn't really spent much time thinking about U.S.-Saudi Arabian relations, what are the implications if we find out that the crown prince had this guy murdered and suddenly our relationship with him is on the rocks? I heard somebody suggest it could like dramatically impact oil prices.
Yeah. Well, so two things. One is we have important strategic relationships with both Turkey and Saudi Arabia. And what that tells you is because those relationships are so important, what you do has enormous consequences, and you should absolutely get the facts first before you start conjecturing about how you're going to respond to them. And the other thing is let's say somebody did commit a malicious act. The question is also is not what happened, but also what does the responsible government do about it? And
right.
Until you know both those things, you really can't make a statement about what we're going to Skipral, which, you know, the poisoning of the two people in Britain by the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
That was a case study in exactly how they did it right. Unlike the Turks, the British did a serious investigation. They weren't leaking. They weren't doing this thing in the press. They weren't, you know, trying to poke their fingers in it. And it was seen as credible. And when they were done, they produced evidence that was transparent that people could look at. And what the British were able to do was to garner the entire support of the Western world in going after the Russians. That's not what's happening here. And I think that's a big mistake on both the part of the Saudis and on the part of the Turks. They should have jointly held an investigation, put the facts out there, and then held people accountable. And then there'd be support for both governments. And so I actually think that this administration, by saying, well, we're going to press people and get the facts, I think that's the right course of action. Even though everybody wants this to be, you know, like a Law and Order episode and everything done in 60 minutes, but it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and people also need to remember you're dealing with a monarchy over there, right?
It is a monarchy, and they have they have different laws. They investigate, and so as does Turkey. Where in Turkey, apparently you're guilty until proven innocent, as I guess we found out from the trial.
Well, Mitch.
So there's a lot of stuff to unpack there, and here's look, I get that you can be for the Saudis or Turks or for everything, but what we do is we immediately make it all about Trump, and that's incredibly distorting, right? And so people start to spin this as how can we attack the president? How can we defend the president? It's just nuts.
I've had a hard time focusing on why the media is so worked up over the fact that the president wants to wait and see what happens. It's amazing to watch.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, I got to run. I appreciate your time.
All right, good talking to you.
You bet. At JJ Carafano on Twitter, aheritage.org, to read more Jim's thoughts on the foreign policy, which are always excellent. That's true. What an overreal. Why was this even a question in the United States Senate debate last night? And then get to more important stuff. We'll get to the soapbox and ask those questions coming up.
Of course, I support the Second Amendment. But what the NRA has peddled for years is that you can't support the Second Amendment and gun safety at the same time. And you can. I was raised in a household where, in rural Missouri, where my dad hunting was something that we all knew we had to get out of the way because it was way more important to him at a certain time of the year.
Yeah, whatever. Stop it. I can't take it anymore. How come nobody asked her the hard questions last night at this debate? I got a few ideas. Let's get to the soapbox.
Now, Mark Cox, soapbox.
All right, so we finally got the debate that I've been waiting for a debate stage with just Josh Hawley and Claire McCaskill on it. But in the end, we really didn't get much at all if you watched it. Listen, there's one way to beat Claire McCaskill in this state, and that is to unveil her for the left-wing progressive that she is when she goes to Washington. On guns, on taxes, on abortion, on immigration. Unless you watched a different debate than I did last night, this was an opportunity lost. Here's my first question. Did Claire McCaskill get to pick the moderators? Right? Judy Woodruff from NPR. Ooh, there, that's hard hitting. And Joe Manny's. Now, both of these people, Joe Manny's used to work for the Post. Now she works for the local NPR station here right on radio. Both definitely look coming at from the left. We know that. I have no idea, really, where Mike Bush stands on things, and that's probably a good thing. But I heard a clear difference last night in the tone of questions asked to McCaskill versus Hawley. I heard it. So PBS and NPR, the loved children of the liberal elite. Case in point, the Project Veritas video. How in the world, in a 75-minute debate, was that never brought up? Can somebody please raise their hand and explain that to me? That's all I'm asking for. Because you had clear examples last night. You don't have to be Walter Cronkite to figure out the questions, right? Senator McCaskill, how much money did Planned Parenthood surreptitiously funnel to your campaign? Hey, Senator McCaskill, your regional campaign official was heard on video this week saying you support a full ban on semi-automatic rifles. Yet you say you support the Second Amendment. What's the truth, Senator McCaskill? But none of these hard-edged journalists thought to ask that question. Instead, we have to hear Judy Woodruff seriously question these two Missouri candidates on what they would do in the Saudi Arabia situation, as if that's their decision to make. So for the president, who the hell cares? Nobody cares. Here's my take on this. This was not a strong performance by Claire McCaskill. I thought she was defensive all night, which is a good thing. She was kind of on the ropes like a boxer. Playing rope-a-dope like Muhammad Ali. But there were some chances for some body blows that were passed up. So if she claimed to be a moderate once, she claimed it 100 times. Nobody challenged her on that. I understand that Josh Hawley had a difficult challenge of not wanting to appear to be too hard on this grandmotherly figure that was standing across from him there. But opportunities were missed. The fact that she never brought up the Project Veritas video stuns me, but it must mean that she's scared of it despite her accusations against Hawley earlier this week. She had a golden opportunity to challenge him, but she didn't do it, right? She didn't mention it. There's a simple reason, because she can't deny anything in the report. But instead of facing her down with any of that, she was given softball questions by the moderators and softball questions from the audience. And Josh Hawley missed a golden opportunity to land a couple of body blows on those issues. He didn't do it. He should have turned to gun ban Claire and asked her directly to explain to Missourians why she wants to strip law-abiding citizens of their guns. So we got the debate last night, but Claire McCaskill got a pass. We'll get to more of your phone calls coming up. 314-241-9797.
So anyway, I think that we owe the American people to be there for them, for their financial security, respecting the dignity and worth of every person in our country. And if there's some collateral damage for some others who do not share our view, well, so be it. But it shouldn't be our original purpose.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi there basically saying that watch out when she gets the gavel back in her hand.
What a horrible woman she is.
Yeah. There may be collateral damage, but guess what? We're not going to be civil. We're going to protect the American people. She's talking impeachment. You got Democrats in the Senate now, including Feinstein, suggesting that they reopen the investigation into Judge Kavanaugh. Another name, by the way, that barely came up in the debate last night. Nobody really asked about that. Mm-hmm. I think Josh might have referred to it in one of his responses that she voted against the president's Supreme Court pick. But beyond that, I would have battered her over the head with that, because the majority of Missourians supported Judge Kavanaugh being on the court. So, yeah, it's just, I don't know. These Democrats are a little out of control. Go to cut number 9, the current day Spartacus, please.
Democracy is not a spectator sport. It is a full contact participatory endeavor. And we may not be called to storm beaches in Normandy to defend this democracy. We may not be called to do freedom rides to make real this democracy. But right now, we are called to stand up and participate to ensure that we have a democracy to pass on to our children.
Yeah, it's a
chicken crap.
A full contact sport. What's the hidden message there? Well, you know, when they go low, we kick them. What's the hidden message there? We can't be civil. You can't be civil with these people, right? And then what you got from Hillary still?
You can put half of Trump supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it.
Right down the line. And then you wonder why we have candidates being attacked around the country. You know, I found out that the lady that was attacked out in Utah,
yeah,
used to be a campaign manager for Senator Blunt in one of his campaigns. Huh. She's now working for a candidate out in Utah. And some left-wing nut, some George Soros-related employee for a PAC that George Soros heavily supports, confronted the candidate and basically put his campaign manager in a chokehold up against a wall. And said, you know what happens next. I mean, the woman was in fear of her life. So that's what you're facing around the country. It's like an adult temper tantrum. When's the last time you saw conservatives act? People point to the Tea Party. You know what the Tea Party was about? Tea Party wasn't about violent revolution. That wasn't what it was about at all. This is what it was about.
That's the current
then
spending.
To stop spending. Stop spending. Stop spending. Stop spending. Spending. Stop spending. That's what we want.
So Barack Obama goes into office and he triples the national debt, right? Mm-hmm. And Democrats had no problem with that. And I've complained all along that the Republicans had their share of blame for it because they went along with it. Donald Trump gets in office and he cuts taxes and the debt goes back up a little, the deficit goes back up a little bit. Right. And that was a point of issue for Claire McCaskill last night. Well, the Republicans weren't worried about it at all. When it's Trump, but they were screaming bloody murder. And the point about this is, folks, you see where they're going here. They want to get back in control. They want to take away the tax cuts. Claire McCaskill never supported him to begin with. They never supported him to begin with. The president bears some responsibility because he went along with the omnibus. Shouldn't have done that. This focus on Social Security and Medicare. Claire McCaskill, one of the points she made last night was talking about how Josh Hawley is planning to cut Medicare. Go to cut 32 for me, please.
It's so interesting that Josh mentioned the $716 billion. That was not a cut to Medicare in ACA. That was a cut to the profits of the health insurance companies.
Oh, come on.
That was giving a haircut to the guaranteed profits of the health insurance companies and the Medicare Advantage
program.
No,
stop it. No, it wasn't. The money was what that cost was pushed off onto the states for the states that accepted it, right? And then eventually federal support went away and all of that fell on the taxpayers in those states. And Missouri said no. This was a shell game they played with Obamacare. They raised taxes incrementally over a five-year period so you wouldn't feel it all at once. Guess what? The taxes are still in place. We did away with the mandate. This thing was a boondoggle from day one. And now they want to blame Josh Hawley last night for his lawsuit that would have basically stripped the mandate and other things like that out of Obamacare. Obamacare needs to be done away with. We need to exit that situation. It's going to bankrupt this country if we don't. We threw out the baby with the bathwater when it came out to healthcare. There were better ways to deal with that. All right, with the time we've got left, I want to get to a break here. But the time we got left, I want to talk more about my voter guide that's out there. I want you to read it, to print it off this weekend. Take a minute. We've got a shorter version of it. You can use almost like a cheat sheet. We're going to have an Illinois voter guide that Annie Fry's working on that's going to be on our website on Monday. So I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to get to your phone calls at 314-241-9797. We're back in just a minute.
Trump here. If I haven't insulted you yet, stick around, you hockey puck.
All right, glad you're back with us. Hey, just a quick reminder, we're going to be thanking our first responders throughout the month of November. But first, you can help me out here, because if you know of maybe an EMT or a fire department or a police unit in your community, a department that you think needs to be recognized, just go to our website, 971talk.com/responder, and let us know who they are. And then every weekday in the month of November, we're going to highlight a different group. We're going to thank them for the difficult jobs they do, mm-hmm. serving and protecting our communities. We're going to be delivering a few things to them. And you can also show your appreciation, if you'd like, by donating. We'll have a link on the website for this, to Responder Rescue. That's a local organization that gives assistance to responders in need. And it's all of this brought to you by our friends over at the Range St. Louis West, and we appreciate their sponsorship of our First Responders Thanksgiving. So thank you for doing that. Quickly, to the voter guide, if you haven't been to the website yet, if you go to 971talk.com/Cox, we have got our voter's guide up there for Missouri statewide and St. Louis County issues. Folks, if you missed my interview this morning with Rick Stream, he's the St. Louis County Elections Director, it was eye-opening. Mm. There are 15 ballot initiatives on my ballot this year in St. Louis County. That's the ones from the state and then the ones from the county total. And some of them, the names sound very similar, right? There's a Prop 1, there's an Amendment 1, there's an Amendment 2, there's a Prop 2. You have to understand these before you walk into the ballot box, which is what I've tried to do here for you. I let you read the ballot language, and then I give you my summary of what the thing really does, and then I tell you how I'm voting on it. You can make your own mind up. If you're smart, you'll agree with me, of course.
That's my favorite part of that setup.
And Tricia over here did a great job of putting together what we're calling our cheat sheet, which is a very shortened version of my yes and no answers on how I'm voting on all of these, that if you agree or disagree, you can print the thing off and take it into the booth with you. What she also did today, if you go to the voter's guide, she put a link to there's a link not only to the Missouri Secretary of State's webpage, which lets you read the full ballot language for everything on the statewide ballot, right? Every issue, every amendment. But there's also a link to the St. Louis County Elections Board website. You can go on there, you can find your precinct, and you can look at a sample version of your ballot. That's important because depending on where you live, if you don't live in St. Louis County, you live in Franklin County or Jefferson County or somewhere else in Missouri, your ballot's going to look different. But you can get a sneak preview of it right there on the website, and we've got a link built in for that. So please go do that. This is important stuff. There's a tax increase question on there, 10 cents a gallon. There's a minimum wage increase. Those three medical marijuana propositions. And here's the thing about it. If all three of them pass, it's going to be a nightmare because it's going to have to go to court and a judge is going to have to make that decision. We can't let that happen. So educate yourself and vote appropriately, and then you can see how I'm going to vote on there as well. Now, this is important as well. We've had folks from Metro East call in and say, well, what about an Illinois voter guide? Annie Fry's working on that. And she told me on the air this morning she'll have that ready for you on her website probably by Monday on the Facebook page, and that we'll put a link on the station website as well. So we got you covered. Missouri and Illinois, you're going to have a great way to kind of educate yourself easily. I've done a lot of the work for you. That's what I'm here for. Just want you to know that. I'm here for you, folks. Anyway, go check that out.
So thankful for
that. Yeah.
Well, hey, listen, have a great weekend. Stick around. Kilmeade's up next. Annie Fry, noon to 3. And I will see you back here on Monday morning.
Get more at 971talk.com.